A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. The valves on an automobile engine must open and close thousands of times a minute. When gummy carbon deposits interfere with this valve action, engine efficiency goes down in a hurry, and it stays down until that gummy carbon is cleaned out. And how do you clean it out? With 4 magic ounces of Amoco 586 upper cylinder lubricant. Your Amoco man mixes it with the fuel in the tank. It works as you drive. Amoco 586. Ask your Amoco man about it. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. The status of the Korean truce negotiations is one of utter confusion. The communists have called the talks off, advancing the ludicrous accusation that an Allied plane tried to murder members of their delegation in the neutral zone at Kaesong. But at the same time, the communists suggest they are ready to resume the talks if their conditions are met. Allied Commander Ridgway has dismissed the communist accusations as a frame-up and a fake on the basis of his officers' investigations. His headquarters says the bombing incident was planned in advance because the communist negotiators were losing out in their demands and were also losing face in Asia. President Truman put it pretty well at his news conference this afternoon in these words, which we recorded.
We do not know the purpose of this new communist masquerade at Kaesong. A communist liaison officer last night made certain statements about calling off further meetings in the armistice negotiations, but it is not clear whether he was referring to the meetings planned for today, to the meetings for the next several days, or whether it is the communist intention to back out of the armistice negotiations altogether. Until this is clarified, we cannot appraise the events of last night, except that they obviously were not calculated to move the negotiations forward toward an armistice.
Obviously not calculated to move the negotiations forward toward an armistice is right. If the Chinese and North Koreans are following the orthodox communist policy of confusion and misdirection, they have achieved a situation that Comrade Nikolai Lenin himself might have applauded. With the accusation that the Allies are assassins comes the expressed hope by the Chinese and North Koreans in these words that the armistice negotiations will proceed smoothly and that a just and reasonable agreement acceptable to both sides will be reached. The recent flurry of communist charges about neutral zone violations has almost obscured the fact that the real point at issue is the establishment of the buffer zone before the real armistice negotiations can begin. And here, too, there is confusion. The communists insisting this zone be established along the 38th parallel, the Allies wanting it along the present battle line, which is northward of this mythical boundary. But here, too, there is some confusion, as an examination of recent history will show. Last March, General Ridgway said this: "It would be a tremendous victory for the United Nations if the war ended with our forces in control up to the 38th parallel." In June, Secretary of State Dean Acheson said at the MacArthur inquiry, "If the aggression in Korea would end at the 38th parallel and we had reliable assurance that it would not be resumed, then we could return to a peacetime status, could hope gradually to remove the troops from Korea, both Chinese and the United Nations." Since those statements were made and almost forgotten, there would seem to have been many alterations in the state of the world that have led the Allied strategists to the conclusion that the 38th parallel is not good enough for the dividing line between the United Nations and communist territory. It will also be remembered that when those statements were made, we were not yet at the 38th parallel. The military men would have been pleased if we had been. There's also another statement on the record of history that has been almost forgotten, but which bears remembering. It's by Premier Stalin of Russia, the statement made last February, and it goes like this: "If Britain and the United States finally reject the proposals made by the People's Government of China, the war in Korea can only end in the defeat of the interventionists." That could be a pep talk for Beiping. It could also be a suggestion that the Russians are committed in Korea, that although the Chinese have been dissatisfied with the help they've been getting from Moscow, the fact that they're being so aggressive now in snarling up the truce talks may mean that they have received assurance from the Kremlin that if the war continues, some real help may be forthcoming. One recalls something Walter Lippmann once said: "The Russians may not carry out their promises. They almost always carry out their threats." A marginal note on the Korean truce talks. When word came that the communists had broken them off, the commodity markets were cheerful, as they say. Wool futures went up nearly 8 cents in early trading. Cotton up as much as $1.50 a bale. Cocoa, coffee, and vegetable oils were strong. Sugar futures advanced the legal limit before their profit-taking cut them back. Tin and rubber prices were higher in both Singapore and London. Oil shares on world markets were cheerful at the news of the collapse of the negotiations between Britain and Iran. But there's not much else to be cheerful about in that news. The British tonight announced they will hold on to the Abadan refinery indefinitely and use protective measures if necessary. A reminder to the Iranians that there are 10 British warships in the Abadan area in the Persian Gulf and a British air fleet in neighboring Iraq. I have asked Howard K. Smith to discuss this story, and we'll hear his report now from London.
Most Britons are interpreting Prime Minister Attlee's message of this afternoon to mean that he has finally adopted the line of his Conservative Party opponents and has decided to hold the Abadan refineries by force. Until now, the Labour government has favored holding on until pressure should be applied, then getting out to avoid trouble. Mr. Attlee's statement today, however, asks the refinery employees to stay on, to quote the statement, until reason returns, which apparently means indefinitely if the Iranians refuse negotiation. That interpretation seems reinforced by the statement issued simultaneously today by the Foreign Office here in London, saying that if order in Abadan were not preserved by the Iranians, the British would take care of it themselves. Moreover, it's clear to everybody here, the 10 warships now in the Abadan vicinity are much more than would be needed to cover an eventual evacuation under pressure, if that were still the Labour government's intention. The Attlee message represents a considerable change of policy for the government in another respect also. Hitherto, the Labour cabinet has sought to apply no direct pressure on Iran's internal politics. Attlee's statement now, however, calls on the Persian people to recognize, to quote it again, the harm their present government is causing, which sounds to most people here like a clear invitation to the Iranians to get rid of the Mossadegh regime. Just a couple of weeks ago, measures of this nature would have split the British nation politically. But it's a sign of how the mood has changed in the past couple of weeks that all of tomorrow morning's papers call these steps, to quote the Manchester Guardian, very good sense indeed. The conservative Daily Mail, which has until now bitterly attacked the Labour government, sighs with relief that at last it's clear what Britain intends to do. At the same time, the awareness is general that these steps can cause grave complications in the Cold War. One newspaper mentions the gravest of them, the possibility that Russia might, on the basis of her 1921 treaty with Iran, intervene if disorders should break out. However, whatever the risks, it seems pretty certain that the British are at one in being willing to take them. The feeling here is that unless the line is drawn in Iran, the unreasoning brand of nationalism will proceed to break up the Western position throughout the Near East and upset the power balance just where it is most delicately poised. Back now to Don Hollenbeck in New York.
The House of Representatives today began a 19-day holiday, thus missed hearing a strongly worded message from President Truman asking for stronger price controls and denouncing a portion of the law passed 3 weeks ago as an economic booby trap. The president's message was read only to the Senate. 12 members of that body were on hand to hear it, 8 Democrats and 4 Republicans, and one senator to whom it was particularly directed was absent, laid up in Bethesda Hospital with a back injury. He's Senator Capehart of Indiana, and in the message today, President Truman characterized his amendment requiring that price ceilings take into account cost increases since Korea. The president called that the economic booby trap. He commented thus, "It saddles the consumers of America with a promissory note of higher prices payable to business on demand." If, the president said, it had simply and openly provided a straight across the board increase in ceiling prices, the damage to price control would have been clear and clean. But, he went on, "the delayed action fuses in this amendment make it all the more insidious, all the more dangerous, because the fuses are set to explode at the very moment when they will do the most damage, when inflationary pressures are most acute." The president also specifically asked for the repeal of 2 other amendments, one of which requires that distributors be allowed pre-Korean markups on goods, the other which prohibits quotas on slaughtering. Of the first, the president said, "under the guise of giving wholesalers and retailers their customary percentage markups on the things they sell, the amendment simply invites distributors to become commission salesmen for inflation. It offers them a percentage stake in every price increase." In directing his fire at these three amendments, President Truman said if they are allowed to stand, they will do the greatest damage to price controls, create the most hardship for the American people. And he went on, action should be taken now to change the new law to prevent needless price increases. And he said, I urge the Congress not to wait until irreparable damage has been done to our economy. It hadn't been thought likely that much would come of all that. House members are on vacation for 3 weeks. Even the president's supporters in the Senate have been tepid about making any efforts to alter the controls law. But there was a surprise. Three Republican senators this afternoon immediately introduced legislation aimed at repealing those three amendments to which the president has taken exception. Ferguson of Michigan, Nixon of California, Welker of Idaho introduced the bill. Senator Ferguson and his colleagues said they think the president is denouncing the controls law for political purposes only. They want to give him a full opportunity so that the administration can blame no one but itself if it fails to control inflation. The Senate Finance Committee today recovered a fumble on taxation. It had worked out a formula for an increase under which some persons in the $5,000 to $15,000 a year class would have been soaked too hard. Today, the committee announces it's revised that formula to correct the inequity. The Senate Foreign Relations and Armed Services Committee today voted to bar Secretary of State Dean Acheson from exercising full authority over the proposed $7.5 billion foreign aid program. It was agreed to divide authority among the State Department, the Defense Establishment, and the Economic Cooperation Administration, with the White House empowered to act as umpire in disputes. The full Senate today approved 81-0 a resolution urging economic boycotts of Czechoslovakia in reprisal for the conviction of Associated Press correspondent William Otis for espionage. Just about the time Secretary of State Acheson was extending an extremely brusque reception to the new ambassador from Prague, Vladimir Prochaska. It lasted just 2 minutes while the ambassador arranged for the presentation of his credentials to the president, and he was then hustled out. During those 2 minutes, the secretary departed from the custom of discussing business before credentials have been presented by saying he expected to have a very thorough discussion at the earliest possible moment on the Otis case. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with the footnote to the news. Now, here's Bob Dixon.
If you're going to fry something, the smart thing to do is to pour the cooking oil into the pan before you put it on the stove. Pour oil in a hot pan, and it pops, sputters, smokes, burns up. Yet the oil is protected from the actual flame, and the pan itself, even when it's been on the stove a long time, isn't so hot, only about 500 degrees. But motor oil, the oil that keeps your engine lubricated, really faces heat, up to 4,000 degrees that comes from the flame of burning gasoline. Ordinary oil just can't stand that kind of heat. It smokes, burns up. But Amoco's premium Permalube motor oil was refined to resist heat and keep its oiliness. Moreover, Permalube motor oil is a detergent oil. It cleans as it lubricates. It cleans dirt and dust from moving surfaces. It helps dissolve and clean away gummy carbon and engine varnish. Next time your engine needs oil, remember this. Don't just say, put in a quart of oil. Tell your Amoco man, make it Permalube motor oil. While you're at it, why not get this double protection? Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
At Springfield, Illinois, historians and archaeologists are digging up the backyard of the home that Abraham Lincoln lived in from 1846 to 1861. They have hopes, they say, of finding the original location of a carriage house, a woodshed, and the outdoor plumbing. If enough evidence is found, the state plans to put up replicas of the buildings to complete the shrine at Springfield. And that's the footnote to the news.
Here's something for every user of regular gas to remember. There's a difference in regular gasolines, just as there is in premium gasolines. One regular gas stands out as the best of the regulars. It's American Gas, made by the makers of Amoco Gas to give faster starts, smoother pickup, long mileage. For American Gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco Oval sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is the CBS Radio Network.